Hello, everyone, and welcome to your monthly episode of Troublemakers, a podcast by MakerMag, where we share the authentic stories of indie entrepreneurs. This is Anne-Laure, founder of MakerMag, and today I'll have a chat with Harry Dry, serial entrepreneur and founder of Marketing Examples. But before we jump into it, let me first thank our friends at Blockstack, who are making this podcast possible. Blockstack allows makers to build applications where users really own their data, their identity, their content, and their connections. To give it a spin, go to blockstack.org/makermag. That's blockstack.org/makermag. And now, on to our guest today. Super excited to have Harry Dry with us. Hey, Harry, how are you doing today?
It's great to be here. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Just been outside, did some press-ups, and I'm ready to go.
Perfect. So you're a serial entrepreneur. You've worked on many different projects, and you're currently focused on Marketing Examples, which we can talk a little bit more about later. But first, I want to ask you a question I love asking founders. What was your first ever experience with entrepreneurship?
All right. So I think I must have been about maybe 11 years old or something like that. And off my house, there's a big field off the back of my house, or my parents' house where I used to live. And the field had loads of sweet corn in, and the farmer sort of harvested it at, I don't know, whatever time of the year. I have three brothers, so we sort of realized that, well, it's slightly, I don't know if it was illegal or not, but we kind of always would go out to this field with wheelbarrows, and we used to pick the sweet corn, and then if the tractor drove up, we'd kind of like scurry away. And what happened was we then sell it in, there's like a little housing estate near where we lived, so we'd knock on doors and try and sell the sweet corn. And I think because we were so young, people just always would pay for it. Like, we had about a 90% success rate.
That's amazing.
And I think it ended with, like, I think my brother tried to buy it, because we sort of co-owned it as like 25% each, and it was all just a bit of fun. But I think my brother tried to buy out my other brothers, and I can't really remember how it ended, but in a bit of turmoil, I think, and my dad had to step in and like separate out the money and stuff. That was the first ever thing I sold and the first ever money I had in my hands.
And did you always want to be an entrepreneur when you were a kid, or is that something that happened a bit later?
So actually, no. Like, I was really into comedy. So I always feel like whatever I like, I end up really disliking. So when I was younger, I wanted to be like the person. Actually, I wanted to be a professional footballer. That was what I wanted to be. And then when that kind of dream waned or went away, like, I realized I wasn't going to make the cut. I wanted to be like someone who writes jokes for talk show hosts. So I used to be a big James Corden fan from Gavin and Stacey, the English sitcom. And I wanted to be like his joke writer, which now I like really dislike James Corden, but that was what I wanted to be when I was younger. I wanted to be someone who writes sketches and stuff for talk shows.
Amazing. Okay, let's move on to some of your more recent projects. I think this is actually how I met you for the first time. You were sharing this story at an indie hackers meetup in London. Basically, how you went from sitting in a room doing nothing to being on the phone with the CFO of Yeezy, chatting about your Kanye dating app. So can you tell us a bit more about this, and also why you're not working on it anymore?
Of course. I mean, I think it starts... It starts like really high, and then it kind of goes into more of a reality. But basically, I was living with my parents at the time. I think I was maybe 2 years out of university, or one year out of university. And I put up this landing page for a dating site for Kanye fans. And I didn't really think anything would come of it. But I started just started emailing it to journalists. And, you know, it suddenly just snowballed into something much bigger, and I ended up being fortunate enough, I guess, to build the whole dating website, and it went really well. And then I felt like Kanye might back it, and, you know, so I took out billboards asking for him to get in touch with me, and thinking we should build this dating site together. It was a good period. But I think, in answer to the latter part of the question, why I'm not working on it anymore, I think the reality was that although I had so much great momentum, I just wasn't particularly good at marketing at that stage. Like, I think that there's often a little curse when something goes so viral or whatnot, that you don't really have any follow-up ideas. So I didn't really have a strategy. And I think there was so much momentum at that stage, I could have like got a good podcast going, or I could have started writing articles, or I could have ran ads even, or tried to get some kind of investment. But I didn't really have any of the sort of knowledge, I think. So it ended up kind of just dying off slowly. And I think, it was a good lesson to learn. I think just that you need kind of like an action plan. I didn't really have an action plan when I was doing that project.
Yeah, that makes sense. And is that what inspired Marketing Examples, your current project?
I think that whatever I've done, I've kind of learned from the mistake of it. So with the Kanye thing, it was like, there's no way of sustainably getting users. So with Marketing Examples, I think I wanted to do something far less ambitious was what I kind of learned. I think that if you try and take over the world, like what I was trying to do in a way, like with this huge dating site, you're probably going to fall flat on your face, and it's easier to just go step by step, I think. So yeah, I think that it was a much humbler project, a much simpler project, and like it kind of, I think I stripped away all the stuff which kind of didn't work, maybe the superfluousness of the easy thing. And it did, yeah, it definitely influenced this one, yeah.
And so can you tell us a little bit more about it, about Marketing Examples?
Sure. It's the place to go if you want to learn about marketing. I think that the idea came from just being very frustrated with what was currently out there in terms of marketing knowledge. Like I Googled the other day, how do you, I Googled cold email examples the other day just to try and see if there's any inspiration for writing a cold email. And the top five searches on Google, all the emails, they write like email templates out. And honestly, they're all like, in my opinion, like spam emails. If you were sending them, I'd think it was the worst email example. And it's the same in everywhere. Like if you're looking at, if you Google how to grow an Instagram following, you'll be told stuff which is just, you know, or a Twitter one I know a bit more about. It would be like tweet every day and schedule your tweets and tweet about other people's blogs and stuff. It's just not particularly authentic. And I think that, yeah, the marketing resources are not great. I saw a little gap, and I it's basically a gallery, I suppose, of real world marketing examples, with the focus definitely being on real world. So I think that every example is not just my opinion, because I don't really know all that much. It's kind of based on real companies and strategies they employed, and the idea being that, you know, you can kind of just copy them step for step, or tweak them to your liking.
And you've been kind of eating your own dog food by applying some of these strategies to grow Marketing Examples itself. And I think you went from zero to about 6,000 subscribers in a very short period of time. How did you go about it? What strategies did you use to achieve this?
Well, you have also went from zero to, I don't know, 6,000 subscribers in a very short amount of time. So I'm sure you have your own opinions on this. I think that the one thing which moves the needle more than anything else is very, very good articles. So I think that normally 95% of entrepreneurs work on their product too much, and they don't work on marketing enough. But in my situation, it's a unique case where the best type of marketing I can do is to write an amazing article, because then it gets shared. So I think, firstly, like I say this for yourself, like yourself as well, you really need like a really high quality, and you need to put a lot into the work. And it has to sound quite, I don't know, researched, authentic. So that's the starting point. But in and around that, it's quite funny. I think every one of the however many subscribers I've got has come from a little different place. So maybe some of them come from when I share my stories on the Indie Hackers forum. Some of them come from me sharing them on Reddit. Some of them come from me replying to people's emails, who then kind of become more of a fan. So then they share them with their friends. Some of them come from, you know, podcasts like this. Out of everyone who's subscribed, there's no like bullet where they all suddenly flocked from. Product Hunt was a big deal, but they all kind of found it through, literally just through me commenting. You know, I've wrote a lot of comments on different forums, and I feel like that makes a big difference. But I do feel like once you get to a certain size, it's important to really focus on quality and not quantity. So I'd rather sort of less subscribers, or who are more kind of into it. And I think a mistake I made at the start was I was really bad at replying to people's emails. And then I realized that that was probably probably like the people who like the project the most, and it's the people I must be replying to more than anything else because they're like the real fans. So I think more recently it's been a little bit more of a focus on like making sure that the people who are on the list and the people who visit the website, you know, they really like it. But yeah, they come from everywhere. I mean, how about you? Where do you feel like your players come from?
It's very similar to you, and I 100% agree that it all starts with really good content. There's no way you're going to convert people if your content is not good. So that's the first one thing to work on. And then same as you, just like trying different channels. And so far, I think Twitter has been working really well for me. But I also get lots of subscribers from different places, people resharing the articles, being on podcasts. So yeah, we both have a very similar model in different verticals. But I think lots of the techniques you use, I've used. And I also have used marketing examples myself to find techniques to increase my conversion rate on my website. So thank you for putting this together.
Oh, no, it's very nice of you. I think off that point, I think that it's a really good point because I saw, have you heard of Matthew Saeed or not? He writes about purposeful practice, or like used to be a table tennis player.
No, I haven't.
So he's like kind of a big deal, I suppose, or used to be anyway. And one of my friends, he must have a lot of people come to his website, like he's got a lot of followers on Twitter, all that kind of thing. And one of my friends started doing a little bit of work for him, and he said that he has got a surprisingly few amount of subscribers. And what the kind of conclusion was that although so much traffic is flooding in, that the site is just so awful at turning people into subscribers. So I think in addition to what I said, like you if having a site which converts well is really is probably more important. It's the lever which you can turn on and off easier than having people flood to your site. The easiest way to time is by five, the number of subscribers you have, is probably to make your site go from 1% conversion to 5% conversion, instead of just, you know, flooding more people through it by running ads or by, you know, writing more articles or whatever.
Totally. And I think your conversion rate is really high, right? Was it 12% or something like that?
I think at one point when I wrote the article, it was, I haven't really checked what it was since. I think it's a little bit skewed because I think at the time I'd just done, I'd done the Indie Hackers podcast, I think. And I think at that point I might've also had an article go very well on Reddit. And on Reddit, what I often do is I don't really send them to the site as such. I just send them straight to the subscribe form, because they've kind of already read the article. And I kind of say, to get the case studies, just subscribe, you know, no need to check out the website, because the subscribe is really the main thing. And I think those kind of things perhaps mean that, your subscribe rate goes up a lot. I think if I had much more organic traffic, which I don't have much of, it would definitely be pulled down a lot. So it's not, it's high, but there's a bit of nuance, I suppose, to it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you mentioned earlier that you've been trying to become much better at replying to your true fans, the one that take the time to write to you. Have you identified the kind of profile that these people have? Like, what kind of people are they? Are they founders? Do they work for companies? Do they do marketing there? What kind of people tend to sign up and really engage with marketing examples?
I think it's a mix. I think that a lot of them are founders. I think that being interested in marketing doesn't necessarily mean you're a marketer. It can often mean that, you know, you're a solo founder or you run a small business. The other 50% maybe are more involved in marketing. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword, the replying, because a lot of the time it's people saying, how would you market this? How would you market that? And I get quite confused whether I'm doing a lot of unpaid work, you know, just replying to all these things. But at the same time, there's such a correlation between me sending good email replies and then that person, you know, writing a blog or featuring me in their newsletter or sharing the link on Twitter. How do you deal with with all your replies? Like, do you really enjoy it, or is it a bit of a drag sometimes?
I manage it a bit in the same way I just manage my emails in general. I just usually block half an hour and reply to everyone in one go, just to not be interrupted every time I get an email. And some of them are just, you know, I love what you're doing, keep going, and that takes 2 seconds. But some other people send me very, very long emails, and I want to make sure I also take the time to reply properly. So that's what I do. Once a week, I block half an hour and I reply to everyone in one go.
Yeah, that's smart. I think that just having the constant notification is not great. I think one thing I read was someone shared a line from Paul Graham on Twitter, which is slightly tangential, but I just think so smart. The line is, it's easier to expand user-wise than satisfaction-wise. If people are not satisfied with your product from the word go, that's not really going to change. You're never going to turn that up or down. So if you have like a 9, 10 out of 10 satisfaction, that's the most important thing. And that's kind of what I've been telling myself more. I don't know. I want the list to be everyone's favorite email. I don't really, which means I probably have to be more punctual with my sending of it. But I don't know, I just read that last week and it did change my thinking a little bit. Like, that's really the most important thing, sort of hardcore fans, or, as opposed to lots of them.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also wanted to ask you about how you build the platform, how you build marketing examples. I think you're a self-taught coder, right?
Yeah, indeed I am.
So how did you go about learning how to code, and why did you decide to learn how to code versus maybe using no-code tools or partnering with someone else who's a bit more technical?
When I was learning how to code, I had no idea that no-code tools existed. I had no idea. It was my second year of university, and I was not in the space of sort of like entrepreneurship at all at that point. So I think my friend had told me that, you know, to make a website, you've got to learn HTML or something like that. So it was just purely like a lack of information. And maybe I wish, I know Ben Tossel is someone who seems to be doing incredibly well with no code. And maybe if I knew Ben, I would never have learned in the first place. But just purely in terms of learning, I think I started where everyone starts, which was Free Code Camp or one of those. And I just wasn't learning very quickly, getting a little bit frustrated. It was basically, I had this idea for this book I wanted to write, and that was the only reason why I got into coding in the first place, and I kind of like led me down this road. And I think I wanted to put the book online because I just felt like if I wrote a book, no one would read it, and at least if I had it online for free, then someone might read it. So that's where I got into it from, and it was a really simple HTML page, and from there I kind of really enjoyed the coding probably more than the writing. So I ended up I think I posted on Reddit, like, how do you learn to code? And then I think a few people mentioned Wes Boss. So I started doing a lot of his courses. And yeah, I really enjoyed the coding side. And I made a few projects before the Kanye thing, which was purely really just to develop my coding skills. Like, I made a site where I sold canvas prints. And the idea wasn't too great, but I think it was just good to make a coded project. But, you know, having said all this, I do think that it doesn't really matter. And at the end of the day, like, the code is, I think Peter Levels said once on Indie Hackers podcast, actually, that the code or the no code is just the paintbrushes. And, you know, they allow you to do certain things, but what really matters is the painting. So if the painting looks good, you know, it doesn't matter how you made it. And more people probably should be using no code tools, but I know you do. And I think it means you're probably a bit quicker, perhaps.
Yeah, it's I find it like a really good way to kind of like try out things very quickly. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of just testing ideas rather than spending months building something that maybe some like nobody wants. So that's how I find it useful. And it's been really interesting, and I find it quite impressive to see everything that is possible to build with no code now. I've also been following what Ben Tossel is doing, and sometimes he posts tutorials where I'm like, wow, that's pretty crazy, like a clone of Uber or Airbnb. The only one thing that makes me a bit skeptical about no code at the moment is that you are kind of locked into a third-party platform. So that's why, you know, I personally see WordPress as a no-code tool, but it's self-hosted, it's open source, and it means that I can move it to any other platform whenever I want to. So I'm planning on moving to Ghost, for example, and that's going to be fairly easy. So that's the only worry I have with no-code tools versus coding your own stuff or using open source software, is that you may end up being locked in a platform and having a hard time leaving if you want to.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And it kind of extends to why I think email subscribers are underrated, because let's say, I mean, I think of the people who's invested loads of money in building Facebook groups like 5 years ago. Now Facebook groups are just completely dead. There's no real, but like, there's no real value to that. So, and I guess the email subscriber is the closest you could get other than like a phone number or I guess actually a user on your own platform, like someone with an account on your own website. And I do feel like control is a big deal. And sometimes even with Twitter, like I ran a few ads on Twitter, and Twitter's a massive deal, but you know, who knows what happens to it? Maybe it becomes uncool, or the CEO does something bad and people boycott. You know, it is a little bit, it's in the back of my mind that not that having the full ownership thing. And I guess that's why coding the site myself does make me slightly more anti-fragile against randomness.
Yeah, I totally agree with you regarding owning your audience. That was also part of the reason why I decided to start my own newsletter, because I have quite a few followers on Twitter. But as you said, I don't really own this audience. So I feel much more comfortable now that I also have newsletter subscribers that I can directly connect with, and where no algorithm can, you know, I have access to one of the most direct ways of communicating with them, basically, which is sending an email to their inbox.
Yeah, I think you don't believe it until it happens either. So right now people will be like, oh, but you know, Twitter's never gonna, nothing's gonna happen, but you just don't know. Like, until the event happens, no one sees it coming.
Totally. That's what happened with Medium, for example. Lots of people had huge audiences there, and then their content was put behind a paywall. Yeah, it's pretty terrible. And this is also why there's been a big wave of writers and content creators who decided to move back to their own self-hosted blog.
I'm one of those, I guess. Like, I don't know. I feel like I never liked Medium. I'm not sure. It always irritated me writing stuff on Medium.
So now that you own this audience, you have now 6,000 subscribers. What are you planning to do with it besides providing them with free content? What's the plan for marketing examples?
Yeah, that's the age-old question, isn't it? Like, when you have the audience, what do you do? And I think I'm quite a short-term thinker. So my goal was to make 10,000 email subscribers and Twitter followers, and then make up more of my mind, which is such a boring answer. But I think you end up like, I don't know, I'm kind of like a bit of a laser focused person. So I think that, for example, this week I didn't write a single article, and it's because I tried to write about 4 articles. So it didn't go too well. And I think that if I started right now, like thinking in the future too much, I'd probably take my eye off the ball and I don't know. But in terms of specifically, it's tricky. Like, I thought a lot about YouTube. I think that I'd like to turn all these into YouTube videos. I think that I want people to really be able to binge this stuff. And I think that people don't like reading too much. So if they could just play a playlist on YouTube, that would be great. I also think I like the challenge of trying to create a forum, which is very difficult, or more of a community. I feel like the amount I write on Indie Hackers right now, you know, if I just wrote without my own site, it'd be great. In terms of payment, it's a bit of a cop-out answer. And I think that people probably think I'm very naive, but I'm actually not too stressed about this, because in the grand scheme of things, although like the money at the moment just comes from sponsorship, I'm more into driving down the highway at a faster pace, like a 70 miles an hour pace. Actually, that analogy just makes no sense whatsoever. Basically, I think long and short of my babbling is that I'm not sure how I want to turn this into more of like a money-making machine. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not too sure. What are your own thoughts for your own project?
I think it's completely fine to not be completely sure at first. And there there are lots of very smart people who think the same way, that first build your audience and then figure out the product rather than the other way around. I think building an audience is also a great way to explore, test, and validate ideas. So I don't think it's naive, your approach. And I've had a similar approach. I basically decided to get to 5,000 subscribers before I would even think about monetizing that audience. And similar to you, I feel comfortable because I have sponsors right now. So it is a profitable project, which is great. And in terms of ways I want to monetize it in the future, I'm thinking of creating more high value content that people would be willing to pay for. So I have the free articles on the blog, but I'm working on creating a course that's a bit more in-depth and reviewing some of these concepts. Why not offering, you know, one-to-one coaching or workshops? So I'm thinking about all these, and I'm not set on any of these options for now. But the good thing about having this audience is that in the newsletter, I can just tell them, hey, that's what I'm working on. What do you think? Just hit reply and let me know.
No, I think I like your approach. I think, yeah, the money is not at the forefront of my mind. I think that if I could say, instead of like trying to grab things here and there, if I could just become the best marketing writer in the world, hands down, no questions answered, it's the thing off everyone's lips when they're like, how do you go, where do you go to learn marketing? Not to university, you go to this website, then I don't really have to worry too much about the bigger things. So about money, I think that yeah, if I could do that, then I think my problems will solve themselves. But who knows, maybe we do another podcast in 6 months and then you're like, how are you making money? And I'm like, yeah, well, it turns out that wasn't such a good idea. Who knows what happens? It's tricky. I know that Adam Wafen and Steve Shogan just did an amazing job of growing an audience and making a course. And that's what Wes Boss kind of does as well. Like, I think he's he balances sort of free content and courses incredibly well. I think the best thing he ever did was his most legendary course of all time was JavaScript 30, and it was all free. So he just got so much kind of attention from that whenever he does like a paid one now, it's like a sort of default buy.
Yeah, typical way to build a funnel. What I like about this is that there's something for everyone. And even if you don't convert that many customers to your paid courses, you're putting so much free content out there in the world. So you're doing something good. And if some people can benefit from it, that's already a net positive in my book.
Yes, and that's where I'm looking at it. I think that we're both very young and like, you don't have to play your cards too soon, I guess. Like if you have a good hand in poker, you can just keep checking, maybe check raising, and then suddenly the pot gets really big and like you don't even know about it. And then, but I don't know. At the same time, I do think there's a certain naivety to me, but I learned it my own way. Like I learned it the hard way, and that's cool.
Amazing. Well, that's the end of the episode. If people want to learn more about your work, where can they go, and do you have any final tip or advice to share with the listeners?
Well, thanks very much for having me on. It was very fun. I'm on Twitter, and yeah, I guess probably there, or maybe the website. But as well, I don't think that you have to follow me. I think just do your own thing and work it out yourself. I think that all the things I ever learned about in life, you sort of have to figure them out yourself. So keep action. The action is the word of the day, and you'll be great.
Love it. Thanks so much, Harry.